Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where our job is to help you build visibility, professional credibility, and connection with your ideal client by putting the human at the center of innovative marketing, so you can build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship with your ideal clients. I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm honored that you're here with me. If you haven't joined our wonderful marketing transformation community yet, go to innovabiz.co and collect your free gift as well. Do subscribe to the show and also leave a review because it helps others find us. Let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
One of the most powerful communication skills you can develop is to develop the muscle to have something you really want to say badly, but can totally put aside and focus in on the other person and let them feel understood first. If you develop that muscle, then you cannot get in an argument with anyone, because an argument is nothing more than two people who want to be understood very badly at the same time, but nobody's able to do it. If one person can put aside what they have to say, the argument is over.
Welcome back. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. And if you haven't yet listened to my recent conversations with Gino Wickman, the creator of the Entrepreneurial Operating System and business and blue sky strategist Paris Cutler, then check them out after you've listened to today's conversation, of course. I'm really excited to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest today, Dr. Rick Brinkman, a motivational speaker and trainer best known for his conscious communication expertise conveyed to millions of people via keynotes and trainings, radio, television, print interviews, and numerous award-winning books and videos and audio programs. He's co-author of the international best-selling book, Dealing with People You Can't Stand, How to Bring Out the Best in People at Their Worst. In our discussion today, Rick talked to me about observing things and people through the lens of appreciation. We talked about working on yourself first, listening to understand and speaking to be understood. And he explained his technique of chunking up to common purpose using the intent, criteria, idea framework. Without further ado, then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Rick Brinkman. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today from Portland, Oregon in the USA, Dr. Rick Brinkman, who's a speaker and a writer and co-author of the books Dealing with People You Can't Stand, Dealing with Meetings You Can't Stand, and Life by Design, among many others. Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Rick. It's a great privilege to have you as my guest.
Well, I feel privileged to be here. Thank you.
Now, Dr. Gleb Sapirsky, who was our guest on episode 270 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, suggested that we have a conversation with you, Rick. So big hello to Gleb.
Yeah. Thank you, Gleb.
And it was interesting, as I was doing the research for this, I realized that I had the original version of your book, Dealing with People You Can't Stand, on my bookshelf since 1994. I think I read it back then, and I was in a completely different space then in the corporate world. Uh-huh. And I had another glance through the book and thought, oh, I see this from a completely different perspective today. So I'm looking forward to digging into that a little bit more. But before we get there, how did all this come about? How did you get into writing about dealing with difficult people and then taking that into the meeting space and related areas?
Well, the short story is both my co-author and I were in naturopathic medical school, which is a holistic medical degree. And we met a medical doctor. He used to be head of OBGYN in a major hospital. And he said that the symptom is a metaphor for what's going on. If somebody has uterine bleeding, you should ask them, if those were teardrops, what would you be crying about? And he turned us on to counseling and digging deeper into what's happening in people's lives and how that ultimately might create physical symptoms. We read all the books on his reading list. Nine of them were neuro-linguistic programming, which some of you may know of through Anthony Robbins. This is way pre-Anthony. This is the original Bandler and Grinder. We got a hold of those and we started seeing patients and working with them on deeper levels, especially patients who tried everything. And lo and behold, magic started to happen. You know, I had a woman who had arthritis 15 years. She tried everything. So I figure I'll pry into her life. And I find out her husband works for the federal government. So he's flying from Portland, Oregon to Washington, D.C., cross country each week. She says she's hated the job for 20 years, but doesn't express it, wants to support him. He was supposed to take an early retirement. He decided against that. She suppressed her feelings about that too. When minor upsets would occur, she would suppress it because she only had 2 days a week together. Now, if you suppress too much with somebody you care about, it builds up a barrier between the two of you. And my entire prescription is to teach her how you share upset without the other person feeling attacked. She did this, and 30 days later, symptoms were gone and they stayed gone. And so Rick and I had a lot of these experiences. Next thing you know, we're doing seminars and teaching communication because we saw how foundational communication and relationships are to people's health and wellness. There's a big three. That's one, communication, relationships. Another one is fulfillment. Are you on track fulfilling values and goals that are important to you, or do you feel like you're dead end, same old, going nowhere? You know, I had a patient who was depressed. I said, all right, where are you at right now? He goes, oh, dead end job, going nowhere. I said, how's your past? Filled with failure. I said, what about your future? He says, more of the same. Pretty depressing. Here's a quick tip for your listeners and ever so you can bum yourself out just in case you get too happy. Pick something in your present that you don't like and see it keep going forever in the future. My entire prescription hit with him was to clarify his values, set some goals, break them into action step plans, tune up his self-esteem. And lo and behold, 2 months later, he's on his own business. Depression is history. And that brings us to the third factor, which is self-esteem. So we got communication relationships, we got fulfillment, and we got self-esteem. And really how good you feel about yourself internally is how you'll probably do externally too. And so one thing led to another. And a number of years later, this book was born. And I have to tell you that we had a real problem with naming people. We really didn't feel like it's personality. We needed people to think behavior. See, behavior is like clothing, and it's going to be different, you know, depending on where you're going, what the weather is, who you're going to be with. You're going to wear different things at a formal gathering. You're going to wear different things where you're lounging at home. You're going to wear different things on a weekend with a family member. And behavior's like that too. So, you know, my wife would tell you she has to come to a seminar to hear me speak because in most social situations, I'm going to be a nothing person. But I explained to her, honey, I'm a professional speaker. You have to pay me. Anyone with children has had the experience where the child comes back from a neighbor and neighbor says, oh, how polite and helpful. My child? So behavior changes according to context, where we are, what's going on, and relationship, who we're with. People may seem to be a certain way, but they're not that way all the time. You just don't know how they can be. And if you believe they are that way all the time, that's going to block you from being successful with them because you're going to think that's just the way they are.
Mm. Yeah, that's. I think that's one of the big lessons for me when I think back into the time when I first read the book more than 20 years, nearly 30 years ago now, scary. I probably read the things as this is a label for that person. This person is a sniper, or this person is a know-it-all, and labeled them as that. And of course, that was the filter I looked at them through. So that's a really important point. And I love the metaphor of, you know, having different clothes on for different events and different situations and different times of the day even.
Right. So the key is somebody may be being a know-it-all right now at this meeting. Somebody may being pushy and aggressive in this situation. Somebody might be being a nothing person in the meeting, not sharing what they really feel. So that's just the behavior that's on the surface. And the reason this is important, you can only pay attention to seven, give or take two things at any one time consciously. And we have a part of our brainstem that has multitude functions, but one of which is radar. So if you get married, you see everyone getting married. If you're interested in a certain car, you see it everywhere. And so if I believe that somebody's personality is negative, guess what I noticed? Doot, doot, there they are again. Doot, doot, told you so. I knew nothing would work with that person.
Yeah.
So you get trapped in your own beliefs. And that's a very important thing to separate behavior from personality.
Mm. Yeah, that's a really good point. And it's it triggers for me, I was going to ask this question anyway, but it certainly triggered this. And that's, we noticed that because we've kind of tuned our brain to filter that in, if you like, to let that through our filters. But the other thing, you know, and this is out of NLP, the idea that perception is projection. So if I'm annoyed by particular behavior, what does that mean about me?
Mm, uh-huh. Yeah.
But do you have any thoughts on that? How to approach this?
Well, we definitely balance out each other. You know, somebody who's being a nothing person is going to really annoy somebody who's kind of, all right, let's get things done. What do you think? What positive and negatives? Got to run this meeting over. So they'll annoy each other. First of all, the nothing person's intimidated by the aggression, and the aggression is inflamed by the nothing behavior. So they're kind of co-creating each other. So the buck really stops with each of us internally first to make an attitude adjustment and begin to become flexible in our behavior. You may not be comfortable in all situations, but everything you know, you've learned at one point from nothing when you were born, you know? And so you've got to learn to just be flexible. I know that for me, being the center of attention was never comfortable, but I did take the lead in situations. But when I was starting to speak in front of groups, I had to get more comfortable with being out there totally. And I even at that time had to get a new car, and I was really attracted to this Honda Prelude that had red with gold wheels. And I never would have bought a car that was red, especially with gold wheels. Oh my God, that's so ostentatious. But I really liked it. So I forced myself to, I said, yeah, that's what I'm going to do, because I felt I had to, it's almost like a muscle group that you got to expand. So I needed to expand my willingness to be the center of attention kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So you're flexible. You're not locked in. People are not set in their ways. You can learn old tricks, not to apply any of your listeners or old dogs, but the change has to start to happen within your own head.
Yeah, I think that's a really important one. And I was fascinated because the kind of the last chapter of your book goes into, well, what if people can't stand you? And you talked earlier about, you know, self-esteem and the idea of working on yourself first. You sort of just started explaining that. So tell us a little bit about, you know, why was that the last chapter, first of all? Because for me now, where I look at it now is, you know, when I first read the book, I thought, you know, oh, there's all these other people. So great, this is a fabulous book, because here's a strategy of how I deal with the know-it-all. Here's a strategy of how I deal with the nitpicking judge and so on, all the different behaviors you described. But then it became very transactional. And what I probably didn't understand at the time was that, you know, the first thing I needed to do was actually work on myself.
Yeah. Well, I agree. The foundation is attitude. And I could say how it became the last thing in the book is we had to start where people were, which is, oh, God, that person's a jerk. That she's so whining all the time and never gonna give me anything. So, and when we used to, in the beginning, try to tell them, no, you're the one who has to change. I go, oh, tell me, I'm the one who has to change. So to bypass that resistance, we said, all right, let's look at these behaviors. Now, there's one point in the seminar where we purposely separate personality from behavior, but that point we were 110%. When somebody's being a tank, when somebody's being a whiner, we would not say they were. We would use it more like a verb than a noun that's fixed. Mm. If somebody asked a question, what about somebody's personality is this? We'd go, well, you know, they're agreeable all the time. Well, when people are being yes people all the time, you know, we wouldn't always correct it. Sometimes we would. So that's how it got to be the end of the book. But it really is. There's two halves to the coin, and the more you can change yourself, the more automatically you change everybody who's around you. And so I think what we did see is that people start to see themselves, oh my God, I do that. Oh no, that's what I do with my spouse. And when they see that in themselves, they recognize a level of innocence. And we found that evolves them further. And it's easier to change.
Yeah. I think that's a really important point. The idea of, you know, you're behaving in this way, you're being a know-it-all or you're being a whiner right now. And in fact, turning it into a verb, you're whining right now.
Right.
I think it sort of comes back to the examples you were giving earlier about the treatment of patients and people hang on. Let's say depression is a really good example. People say, I'm depressed. I have depression. So It's kind of like it's part of my identity, right? And I'm going to hang on to that because it defines me. And I need to have that as because it's part of me. So the self-awareness part and the saying that that's just a feeling I have right now or it's just a state I'm in right now so I can choose to come out of that state. It's not part of my identity that I need to hold on to.
Absolutely.
And the same about all these behaviors.
Yep. You turn them into a noun. I remember in NLP terms, they call that a nominalization when you turn a verb into a noun. We kind of rename that freezers because that really meant something to people. You're freezing a state of being, as you said.
Yeah.
My depression, it's always with me. It's a noun, so you always have it. If you're just, right now I'm a little depressed. Okay, later I'll be negative, and after that I might be happy or whatever. Mm. You freeze it up. So we'd like the freezer kink, you unfreeze it.
Yeah, that's great. And also thinking about, again, in NLP terms, like we kind of make up in our own minds about what's going on with other people or what's going on around us. So if somebody's behaving in a certain way, then we attach a meaning to that and we kind of label that person, don't we?
Yes.
So I know you talk quite a bit about, you know, influencing what we can do. So what are some of the steps people can take when they're in that situation, say, oh, I can't stand that person?
Yeah, well, they could label the behavior. They definitely want to go, so what is the behavior in terms of what we call the lens of understanding? And what's this person needing right now? You know, once people get the lens of understanding, like that there are four areas we always have within us. We want to get things done, get things right, get along, get appreciated. If you and I are in a meeting and you're more get it done and I'm more get it right, I'm going to go on and on and on and I'm going to annoy you with the details when you want to get to the bottom line and you got other meetings, places to go and people to do. But if we start to understand this about each other, then if I were to communicate with you, I would first give you the bottom line and then find out, would you like to hear what makes me say that and get your permission to go into a level of detail that would matter to you.
Hmm.
Reversing it, you would understand that I'm into the detail. So you might ask for, okay, tell me what you think, the bottom line, and then tell me briefly why you think that. So you might ask for what you want. And if we start respecting each other, it's like any team sport, all right? People play different positions. At the simplest level, there's a defense and an offensive. And it's not one's right, one's wrong. It's the both of them doing the part they do best together and integrating that creates the highest outcome. So when you start recognizing where people are coming from, then you know people are playing positions. I can depend on you, Jürgen, to move us forward, to make sure this meeting doesn't drag on, that it gets done on time, and we come out with a goal and an action. You can depend on me to know that I'm going to cover those details and make sure that it's all done right. So we found that the book opens people's eyes to how they are, which then opens their eyes to how other people are. And you start seeing things on a whole different level that were right there all the time that you didn't notice before.
Mm. Yeah, which comes back to the opening eyes and looking for the things that perhaps you've ignored and you filter out.
Yeah.
All right. Now, there's a number of things you kind of recommend in the book, and you know, one of them is get what you project and expect. So tell us a little bit about, because I think that sort of follows on from what you've just been saying. So tell us a little bit about how do you articulate that as, let's say you go into a meeting, you know, there's a whole lot of people there that are going to be frustrating you because of their default behavior, let's say. So how do you kind of do that projecting what you expect and build that communication so everybody's playing in the team? In their roles?
Well, as soon as you use the M word with meeting, there are some really other ground rules that we want to put in place. But let's stay with projecting positive. That's when you act like the other person's, whatever they're doing or saying, is coming from the best of intentions.
Hmm.
So if we stay with you and I are at a meeting and I'm the get it right person, you're to get it done, and I'm going on and on and on, you'd go, Rick, I really appreciate that you want us to get this right and how important it is. That's meeting me where I am with my beliefs about it and where I might be coming from. And we only have 5 more minutes, so what would you say is the bottom line? So that would be a positive projection. Or let's say I have to give somebody on a team some feedback. If I just start with, you know, some of your team members have complained about, they go, hey, I'm a team player, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, they'll immediately get defensive. Mm. You want to nip that in the bud, you start out by projecting positive. You say, I know you're a team player, and I know you really care about your team members. And then stop and breathe and let that sink in. They're not going to say, no, are you kidding? I'm trying to annoy everybody around me. And if I annoy you, it's a new record. Woohoo! Whenever you project positive, it's like a push in that direction, and people will step in that direction. And then you'd be clear about your intent. Great, then I'd like to share with you something that will support you in your teamwork. That opens people's minds and makes it safe. Intent. In general, I think it's a good idea to think of communication like a phone number. You need all the digits and you need them in the right order. So intent is like the area code. It's the first part of that phone number. It gets you in the right general vicinity with people. Another projection, positive. I noticed, and this was when my daughter was growing up. My wife would say, will you do the dishes? And she says, yes, I will. And then a little bit later, she says, you're going to do the dishes. Yeah, I'm going to do the dishes. Get a little later, we're going to do the dishes. Now, each one of those going to do the dishes is a negative projection that I don't think you're going to do it. So that's why I have to ask you 3 times over 20 minutes. Positive projection would be, sweetie, I know you're going to do the dishes because you are somebody who does what you say you are. What you going to say to that? No, I'm not. Have you observed? No. Well, yeah, of course. So I'm just wondering, when are you planning on doing it? Now, that's really the inquiry my wife wants is, when's this going to happen? But the way it was first put is causes it to backfire. But if you project positive, you open people's minds and it becomes safe.
Hmm. Yeah. I really like that example too, because it's the old one. The one we often use in workshops is the wife saying to the husband, will you take out the garbage? And it's the same thing. You know, will you take out the garbage? Oh, yeah, I'll do that. but nobody's specifying when to take out the garbage. And of course, there is a critical aspect to that, and that's it's got to be out there before the garbage trucks come around to do their rounds. Yeah, great example. All right, now one of the other things I think you talk a little bit about this in the book. I think this is really important. So tell us a little bit about getting to common purpose, because you talked about people are behaving in certain ways, but their intent is actually quite positive. And so how do you approach something for, what is the intent here? Because we actually both have the same intent. We actually both want the dishes to be washed and cleaned up. We actually both want our garbage bin emptied.
Well, really it's intent, criteria, idea. So for example, I believe this is in the book, but this is when it became crystal clear to me. I'm in my office with a couple. It's the end of the visit. Everybody's feeling good. She suddenly turns to him and says, honey, let's go to the Rose Gardens. And he goes, nah. And she goes, okay. And I go, wait a second, what's your intent right now? Why do you want to go to the Rose Gardens? She says, well, we're feeling close. We have a long time. We do have an hour before I have to pick up the kids. I thought it'd be nice to spend some quiet time together. And he goes, puh, that's a great idea. But I don't want to be outside, too hot, too buggy. How about the cafe we've been meaning to try? Now, in this equation, the intent is to spend time together. Rose Gardens is just the idea, but why Rose Gardens? Why not dinner for two? What's in between is criteria. Okay, they have a time criteria because they have an hour for it to pick up the kids. Maybe geography supports time because Rose Gardens is on the way. Maybe there's budgetary criteria. It won't cost anything. Maybe there's atmospheric criteria, a romantic quiet place. And whenever people have an idea or point of view, where it originates is with an intent, they then run the intent through the criteria and out pops the idea or point of view. But more often than not, we as human beings do not communicate our intent or criteria. We do just what she did. And when he hears Rose Gardens, he just thinks, Once he gets the intent, time together, he adds some more criteria, be indoors, avoid bugs, heat. Now, what I try to train people to do in seminars is you want to communicate intent, criteria, idea. So if she's doing that, she goes, she wouldn't lead with Rose Garden. She'd lead with, I think it's great. We're feeling so close. It'd be nice to spend some time together. So I'm thinking, what will be fit within an hour, be on the way home, won't cost anything, be a nice place. What do you think about going to the Rose Gardens? But as receivers of communication, you can't depend on people to communicate clearly. So it's your responsibility to first clarify and understand. So the first thing he should say is, why do you want to go to the Rose Gardens? Which would reveal spend time together. All right, but what makes you say Rose Gardens? Well, it's on the way home, fits within an hour, da, 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 da. He goes, that sounds good. Can I be indoors? How do you feel about that? Then he could add some more criteria and clarify. To nail this in your behavior is going to eliminate such a huge percent of conflict. It's ridiculous. I mean, intent, I would see couples, you know, their intent now is to clear the air. They don't speak the intent. One goes to the other and says, you know, I was a little upset the other day when you said da 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 because, and the other person hears, We are under attack. This is not a drill. Intent is so huge to go intent, criteria, idea. Always seek it first to understand. And when you're communicating, always present it in that order. You'll save yourself and everybody a lot of trouble.
That's absolutely fabulous advice. And I think that's worth the price of admission today on its own. love it. All right. So chunking back to intent and focusing on intent is a really important part. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now tell us a little bit more about, I know you know, in doing that, sometimes there's questions and often people say, well, I don't know. Like, let's say your feedback example, you know, and you're working with somebody and quite often you'll get the I don't know question. And I heard you say something on a recent podcast that I was listening to and I thought that's a fascinating take on that.
So oh, yeah.
Tell us a little bit more about it.
Because that's your nothing person's first response on a talkative day. I don't know. So this is what works with I don't know. You can do this homeschool or office. You say, guess, make something up. If you did know, what would it be? And then you got to give an expectant look, like mouth open slightly, eyes wide open, leaning forward like any moment, and hold that expectant look for an expectant pause. And 9 out of 10 people who just said, I don't know, well, I guess, they will bring in something that makes total sense. For the 1 in 10 that does not respond to that, you exaggerate. I was doing a couple seminar once. She says he leaves too many glasses in the sink. I say, how many, how often? She says, too many, too often. I say, all right, but give me a number. She says, too many, too often. I say, 50 glasses a day, 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year. She goes, no, 3 glasses 4 times a week. Where were those numbers a moment ago? I'm talking to a surveyor. I say, how much will this cost? He says, I don't know. It's hard to say. I said, $50, $5,000. He goes, oh, no, $500. It's weird, but it's true. It both of those work just incredible. Guess, make something up. You didn't know what would it be, and then hold it and expect it. I would do that with patients, you know, because remember, I was seeing people that have tried everything. So I had nothing to lose. So, you know, okay, well, what do you think these tumors may be about? Oh, I don't know. Well, guess, make something up. You didn't know, what would it be? Well, I'm really angry at my husband. It's amazing. What would that like a blah and come out from those things?
Yeah.
And if you want to have some fun, if you're in North America, get on a crowded elevator. If you're in the UK or Australia, get on a lift, pick out a stranger at random and just give them the expectant look. And they started confessing to all sorts of funny things.
that's funny. I like that. Yeah. Well, it's interesting because this is sort of the world over. I've observed this the world over in traveling. You get on an elevator with a lot of people and everybody kind of stands back to the wall and looks front and looks up at the numbers up above the door.
These days, checking the phone suddenly needs
to checking the phone. That's right. Yeah. So, yeah, making eye contact might be a bit tricky, but yeah, that's funny. Yeah.
I've done some different things. I have an apartment in New York and sometimes people have gotten in and I'm only there occasionally. So I don't really know everybody who lives in the building, but they'll get in. I go, welcome to the elevator, pick a number from 1 to 14. And it really breaks the ice nicely.
Yeah. It's good. Okay. One of the things I was really fascinated about is the idea of kind of taking control of your own communication from the point of view of, first of all, listening to understand and speak to be understood. So tell us a little bit more about that. You've kind of explained to us a little bit the intent criteria idea thing, which is part of that. But, what can we do? What can we all do to, first of all, be better listeners, and then secondly, to make sure that what we say is received in the way it's intended?
Yeah, that's really huge. In fact, one of the most powerful communication skills you can develop is to develop the muscle to have something you really want to say badly, but can totally put aside and focus in on the other person and let them feel understood first. If you develop that muscle, then you cannot get in an argument with anyone, because an argument is nothing more than two people who want to be understood very badly at the same time, but nobody's able to do it. If one person can put aside what they have to say, the argument is over. And I like to think of understanding and as, you know, we have two eyes that see from two different points of view. Our right and our left, I see from slightly different points of view. And when our brain synthesizes those two points of view, that allows us to see depth, three dimensions. Well, imagine your two eyes arguing over whose point of view is correct. Well, that's absurd. They're both correct and both different. But this is what we as human beings do all the time. We argue about our point of view as if that's the only thing right, to the exclusion of all other factors. And I have found that I had to train myself that what you think you understand, keep asking more questions anyway, because you're going to think you understand, that that doesn't mean you really truly understand yet. And certainly if you don't know whatever you're talking about, a person's intent and criteria, those are two of the most important things you could understand right off the bat, you know, why somebody's doing it the way they're doing it. And so that's one of the things you want to dig deeper. I find there's four parts to listening. The first part is kind of nonverbal. You give people meaningful looks and occasional grunts. You want them to get out whatever they have to say. Then what you do is you backtrack. I hear you saying da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and you give them kind of a summary of some of what they've said. That just shows you're listening. Then you start asking questions. Whenever you start asking questions to find out more, it shows you care. When you put listening and caring together, this is what gives people the feeling of being understood. So just by reflecting back some of what they say and dig a little deeper, you will accomplish understanding. And you will very often surprise yourself at how, when you thought you understood three or four questions ago, you really didn't understand. Or you sort of understood, but didn't get a key element of what you really needed to understand. And so that's you. And so before you transition to you sharing something, you give a complete summary and you say, is there anything else? And if they go, no, you got it, then you say, let me tell you what I think on that. And now you can reverse the roles. And as you give, so you'll receive. Really develop that muscle. Let people feel understood first.
Hmm. Yeah, that's really great. And I love the process. How do you, in a situation where it might be a little tense, how do you avoid the other person getting really defensive? You know, why are you asking so many questions? You know, you're being a pain in the butt.
Statement of intent. You can't, if you're just asking questions without a statement of intent, it can seem like an interrogation. If you go, I really want to understand what's going on for you. Do you mind if I ask you some questions? So I would statement of intent, and then I would get permission to ask questions.
Hmm.
And it depends what the issue, you know, there's other factors. Are they in a rush? Is this not the right time and place? Are they really too emotional right now to answer questions? So you gauge that. You know, sometimes some people need to deal with it right now, and other people need time to think about it. You know, they would need to process it. So if people, you see that people need that time, you go, look, I know this. You don't want to get in an argument, and I appreciate that, and you need to think about it. So why don't you think about it, and why don't we reconnect on this later or tomorrow or whatever your time frame is appropriate. But you want to give people permission to have that time to process.
Hmm. So part of that communication is being able to gauge where the other person is at emotionally, physically, perhaps, if you're talking about, I've got another meeting coming up right now, I don't have time to talk about this.
Yes. Mm-hmm. In which case, if they're saying I have another meeting right now, great, then we'll talk about it later. I'll send you a note with some times. You let me know what works for you. So that way you planted it.
Great.
You're not going to let it fall off the cliff, but yeah. Because of time and place, you know, you got to have the right time and place for things, for a conversation and so forth. And you really, I had a patient of mine who I saw for quite a while, and she recently got married. We haven't talked in about a year, but I said, let's just catch up, you know, charge her. And she's telling me how when something's wrong, as soon as her husband gets home, she runs over and there's a mouse in the trap. And he's like, don't tell me this. What, right now? I just got home. And she's like, do you think I should wait? I'm like, it depends. If you want to annoy him, no. If you want to actually talk about it, yes. Wait for the right moment.
Yes, that's a. I think we all fall into that kind of trap where it's like this is the biggest thing on my plate right now, and you have to drop everything and help me deal with it.
Yeah, right. And when you say everybody, and you notice that about yourself, then you understand human behavior. It's, you know, you understand yourself and everybody around you. Yeah.
All right. Well, this is absolutely fascinating, Rick. I could go on talking human behavior for ages. And obviously it's a topic that is never ending. But I think it's a good point now to move on to the buzz, which is our innovation round. And to help our listener who is an innovator and leader in their field with some tips from your experience. So I've got five questions that I'm going to ask, and hopefully you'll give us some insightful answers that will inspire the listener to go and do something awesome today.
Okay, I'm ready.
What's the number one thing you think anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Well, I have a couple of signs on my wall that I think. One is Wayne Gretzky. You miss 100% of the shots you don't take. Fail forward fast. Dream, plan, believe, and act. I love that one. That's a Ferengi rule of acquisition, number 173 from Star Trek. When we marry intention with action, miracles happen. That's from a fortune cookie. And then I'll have the one from NASA. Failure is not an option. So just go for it.
Yeah. That's take action. I think it boils down to some way. Yeah. I love the failure is not an option. That's very clearly.
And I have one more. Wait, there's more. And this is really one of my favorites. Half-assed action is better than perfect procrastination.
Yeah. That's a good one too. Yeah. Done is better than perfect, I think I say. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Or the other one I like is you don't have to be great to start, but you do have to start to be great.
Ooh, I like that too.
All right. Now, what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas or new products?
Well, first thing comes to mind is paying attention to the world around me, since my products very often are based on human interaction. And I created an online class with, I play different characters because I have Green Tree Studios. So I'm a disembodied floating head. He's Professor Bologorodko, the disembodied head of the department. And he's got his grad assistants, righty and lefty. And then there's Professor McFly, fly on the wall, pay attention to communication. So it has all these skits and characters, and people walk through it. I find that I want to have fun. And that's why I learned stand-up comedy and storytelling for live seminars. And people, I know when they're having fun, they learn and they take away something that much more. So for me, it's having a good time and make sure everybody has a good time too.
Yeah, that's. I think that's a really important aspect of anything that we do, because it makes it so much easier. It takes a lot less energy.
It sure does. It creates energy.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, do you have a favorite resource that you use a lot?
A resource for what? Would you say
anything? Resource for your work. Resource for keeping you on track.
Well, I really love this program called Things, which I have for the Mac and the iPhone, and it's how I manage my projects. Mm-hmm. And then I also, in general, like mind maps. I have quite a number of mind mapping programs. Oh. And any big project, I map out it. Really, when you get that, you know, I remember when I discovered it, I was in practice, and it was early on, and I felt like the chart was this weird barrier between me and the patient. One day, at a whim, I put down the chart. I went over to the whiteboard, and any notes I took on the whiteboard, which was, didn't know it, but I was mind mapping. So this causes this, which makes you feel this way. And before you know it, the whiteboard was filled with this guy's problems. I'm like, oh my God, I've been in the other whiteboard if he doesn't stop. And then he stops and he goes, you know what? Look at that. The IRS is after me. I owe that money. My relationship's falling apart. I've got these three health issues. My business is, he goes, whoa, no wonder I'm stressed out. Thank you, doc. I feel much better now. And I said, wait, that was not the therapy. That was the note-taking. But it was therapeutic.
Yeah, yeah.
Anytime you get that big picture view, you're no longer the rat in the maze. You can see what the big picture is. So I'd say mind mapping is, so usually I mind map and then I use to for the to-dos in a program called Things.
Yeah, yeah. I love mind mapping. Have you ever heard, well, unfortunately he's passed on now, but Tony Buzan, who
yes.
developed it.
Yes.
Speak. I was at one of his seminars and learned to juggle. So that was one of the things he
wow.
did, kind of, you know, how you could learn something really quickly. And that was his metaphor for, you know, using mind maps. And ever since then, and this was back in the 1980s, so ever since then, I've been a huge fan of mind mapping.
Yep. Yep. That's great. I was once in a program too, where they use juggling to do that. It's amazing what that does for your psychology. Oh my God, I'm actually doing this.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Not ready for the flaming torches, but it's still impressive.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Now, what's the best way to keep a project or a client on track?
Well, I'd say having a map, a shared map that you,
yeah.
of what you're doing and when you're going to do it. And, you know, with the dates laid out and, you know, the project management, depending on how complex it is with Gantt charts and that sort of thing. But I find that for me, and at least when I work with other people, a mind map and then a specific action list did the trick.
Great. All right. Now, what's the number one thing you think anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
Ask yourself what you want. What's your dream? And then imagine being there and then just work your way back from that point. So what are the steps supposed to happen right before that? What did happen right before that, right before that, right before that? I find that most people can then suddenly have a plan or know where there's parts of the plan that need to be filled in and where will they find that out? And that becomes the next steps and suddenly they're on track.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. It's kind of beginning with the end in mind and then always yeah. focusing on that. It comes back to the intent, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah. Mm. And then there's that inner game, you know, I mean, for me, to know modeling in NLP terms, where you take on the behaviors from another person, character, or whatever. I mean, when I was learning to speak in front of groups, I was scared. I wanted to be calm and centered. I thought, who would be calm and centered in front of 200 people? I thought of Kwai Chang Kain from the Kung Fu television show. It was 1979, David Carradine. He's not going to worry about the 200 people. He could take them if they rush the stage. So I'd get inside his body, and what does he feel? What does he think? How does he be who he is? And then imagine being that in front of the group, being Kwai Chang in front of the group. And basically, I wiped out all nervousness in a 2-week period. And that was history.
Yeah, great advice.
Because what happens is we replay pre-play. You know, if you have an uncomfortable interaction, you play it over and over and over in your head. And how associations get created are things that play over and over, like the song that takes you back, whatever, years. So you got to watch that in your own mind, because this is how we get stuck in our ways. Is because we just replay the past the way it was. You have to go, no, what would I like to do differently? Where do I have that quality? Who has it? Let me redo it. Every time I think about it, I do it the way I would like. When next time I think about the way it'll be, make that a mental habit and you'll become like super person.
Yeah, that's wonderful advice. And I got a story about that, because I, as a young man, I went to donate blood, and what happened was they had a really difficult time finding my vein. And so I got jabbed about a half a dozen times until I finally found the vein. And at that point, I just fainted. It was too much for me. And my blood pressure had dropped down through the floor. And so I woke up and I was with oxygen mask on and everything.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Ever since then, of course, for a long, long, long time, if the doctor said to me, oh, we're going to do a blood test, just a sort of regular routine checkup, I said, oh, no. And for years, I would say, well, I'll lie down on the bed for you to take blood and have the oxygen mask ready, because it's quite likely that I'll faint. And this was just when they did the one jab. So yesterday I actually had a routine blood test again, and I still was nervous, but I was sitting in the chair and I was focused on that white wall and I was imagining some good times that I have on the bicycle and ended up three really deep breaths. The nurse did recognize that I was struggling a little bit, but it passed and I was fine.
Oh, that's great. Congratulations.
So you can make things, change things like that by simply changing the meaning. And yeah.
All and right. Now that's a resource to you. The next time you'll know you're based on having done that much better. So you'll probably
right.
do better.
Yeah. And it's a metaphor for other things as well. So
definitely.
Hmm. All right. Well, thanks, Rick. This has been really fabulous. Now, where can people find out more about you and find out about your books and maybe even reach out and say thanks for what you've shared with us today?
Oh, well, sure. At drrickbrinkman.com. That's DR, like drrickbrinkman.com. Everything is there about everything I do. Books, audios, online class, training, seminars. I'm starting to do virtual programs now. I'm doing my first one next week for Lawrence Livermore Laboratories. So everything would be there. And then, of course, for books, your local Amazon is going to have everything.
Hmm. All right. We'll have links to all of that in the show notes. So thanks for that. And is there a parting piece of advice you'd like to leave our listener today?
Yes. When things get tough, remember life is not a test. It's an actual emergency. Hmm. Good luck.
Yeah, I love that. So you have to take action. Great. All right. Finally then, Rick, who would you like me to chat with on a future Innova Buzz podcast and why?
Oh, that's interesting. Well, I think my co-author, Dr. Rick Kirshner, would be very interesting. Especially not only just about communication, but about natural medicine. At the moment, he's president of the Naturopathic Medical Institute, which is really about, you know, nature cure and focusing on wellness and the things you do to support the body. I think you'd be very interesting.
Mm, yeah, and that's a really important. I mean, as we're recording this, we're kind of in the midst of the corona pandemic and in lockdown here, and I'm sure you're in lockdown as well.
Yeah.
So that's certainly taking care of yourself and your own health is really important in these times, if it's not important at all time, of course.
Yep. Well, in the worst plague or whatever, more people live than die. So, and that there's an immunity thing that happens too. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just speaking to a friend before our thing, and he was in LA, and it sounded like he, as well as his doctor, wife, got corona. Now, they didn't know it at the time. They just thought they were really sick, but now they're seeing the symptoms that they probably did. First him, and then he got better, and then a few weeks later her. But they both got better, and now they probably also have that immunity too.
Hmm. All right. Well, thanks for that, Rick. So we'll get an introduction to Rick Kirshner from you and reach out to him and bring him on. But yeah, thanks for sharing your insights and your wisdom and the tips for dealing with difficult people and how we change ourselves in particular to get on better with others who might have different viewpoints and different behavior. So I really appreciate you sharing all that with us so generously. I've learned a lot. I've enjoyed this immensely. So let's keep in touch.
Yes, I'd love that. Thank you.
Yeah. All the best. Bye.
Bye.
I hope you enjoyed that engaging and insightful conversation with Rick and took something away from his episode. There were so many valuable lessons from the conversation with Rick. I think my favourite for today was to work on things you can control, your own responses, your own communication, and contributing to a better understanding. I'd love to know what you took away from Rick's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which you can find at innovabiz.co/Rick Brinkman. That is RickBrinkman. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/Rick Brinkman. You'll find contact information there also for getting in touch with Rick and links to his website, his books, his social media pages, and the other resources we spoke about in our conversation today. Rick suggested that we have a conversation with his co-author for Dealing with People You Can't Stand, Dr. Rick Kirschner, on a future InnovaBuzz podcast episode. So, Rick, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Rick Brinkman. Tune in again to the next episodes of the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we've got more fantastic guests lined up, including Alex Osterwalder, creator of the Business Model Canvas, and Andrew Barnes of the 4-Day Week. Thanks for listening to this episode. Make sure you subscribe to the show to be reminded of new episodes. It's free to subscribe. Leave a review if you like. Even if you don't like me, I'm okay with that. I'm asking you to leave a review because it helps other people find this show. Go to innovabiz.co to join our marketing transformation community and access a free gift my team and I made for you. It's the Marketing Master Mini Class. We want to give you everything you need to transform your marketing into a human-centered, relationship-focused growth engine. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.